BBC Sport.
This is AFL Saturday with Corbin Middlemass.
McDonald takes it, plays on, goals! Game changer!
AFL coaching record holder.
Mr. Mick Mulhouse.
The man's about to coach a team for the 715th occasion.
Premiership player.
Number 12, Luke Ball.
Finals pressure. Luke Ball from 45 metres out directly from goal. Score the level.
AFL Saturday with Corbin, Mick and Bawley.
AFL Saturday.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital.
And ABC Listen.
The Essendon Football Club front and centre again this week after Scott Gullen's report that Dean Solomon is the president's preferred pick as the next full-time coach of the Bombers. So who is now the front runner to coach the Dons? And can Andrew Welsh be part of the process? The interim coach of the Bombers, the man himself, Dean Solomon, joins us on AFL Saturday. Meanwhile, Geelong are back in the winners' list. They win the whiteout at home. The Suns have now lost three straight. Are they in danger of missing September completely? Jordan Dawson stars. Does Taylor Walker come straight back in for the Crows? And how much tread is left on the tyres of Adam Treloar? And where does Zach Butters play his football in 2027? And is it fair game that opposition clubs discuss it publicly? All of that to come today right here on the award-winning AFL Saturday on ABC Sport. And the home team, they were white hot for White Night. And Geelong back in the winners' list in a big way. And for the Gold Coast Suns, the hot team in the early season has cooled off to be a middle-of-the-road outfit. Geelong by 45. Your calls throughout the program on 1300 558 222. That's 1300 558 222. Corbin Middlemass, the Premiership Pie, Luke Ball. Hello, Bawley.
Afternoon, Corby. Afternoon, listeners. Yeah, good call then. They are a middle of the pack. The Suns, and it's hard to work out why. After, whoa. I mean, you rewind 13 or so weeks, and they absolutely destroyed the team that had them pretty comfortably last night. So, bit of soul searching to do up on the Gold Coast, and it's a fair question because all of a sudden the draw's their enemy. They've got the Hawks, Freo, Collingwood, and then the Crows, the red hot, the resurgent Crows in the next month. So, if they're good enough, they'll handle some of those and get themselves back on track. But at the moment, it's looking like they're a team that'll struggle to even make the wild card round.
Court. Yeah, there's no West Coast, no Richmond, Essendon, North. They don't play any of those teams on the run home. So there's not a soft touch in the back end of the year. I think their easiest games, in inverted commas, are against teams like Carlton, St Kilda and Collingwood, who are the bottom eight teams you probably don't want to play. Like, they're the teams that are challenging for those wildcard spots as well. So, tricky run home for the Suns. The coaching icon, Mick Malthouse, a man who's coached more games than anyone else in VFL AFL football, was there last night, morning or early afternoon, Mick?
G'day, Corby, Bawley, all our listeners. Footy's, we're in the midway. We're not down the home straight, but that question you ask about the Gold Coast after last night, I've got real reservations that their game style can stand up to the better sides.
Elaborate on that. What's wrong with the way they play?
I just think they overuse the ball, yep. And they overuse the ball quite frequently in the back half. Good sides will pressure. I know Geelong got them on the cigar, and what I mean by that, the cigar shape is Geelong have got it tailor-made. What they do, even in the kickoffs, if you can just picture the ground and you can see, and think World Cup soccer, they have four players placed just inside the 50-metre line. They have four players placed outside by 20 metres. So the kicker, even if he plays on, is rushed. And remarkably, Gold Coast didn't do that, and they allowed Holmes to virtually walk his way down to the wing or further. But regularly, Gold Coast lost the ball. So that's that part. Now, I know they're going to be better on a different ground, but I worry about the fact that they haven't got the class to be able to maintain that game against the best sides, and that's overuse.
We'll do more on Friday Night Footy as we work our way through with wins already this weekend for the Crows on Thursday night, and then, of course, the Cats last night. The big story of the week fell in the Herald Sun on Thursday, so Scott Gullen's piece around Dean Solomon, who's going to join us in a few moments' time. Now, Gullen wrote, "It is believed that Essendon President Andrew Welsh would have to be talked out of giving the full-time job to Solomon." He said that Welsh has had Solomon earmarked for some time as the guy to succeed and lead the Bombers.
Who is the front runner, do you think, as it sits at the moment with that news coming to light?
Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, if you take them by their word, then the man in the seat at the moment is. Sort of two schools of thought here, Mick. The cynic in me a little bit has the radar up for maybe a little bit of a red herring just to take the heat out of the James Heard scenario and refocus it back on the process. Remember that Solly was on the board, so perhaps he said, well, let's play that card. It'll just keep the Wolves at bay a little bit. I'll get asked at every press conference, but I'm big enough and I can handle that. And then we'll go through the usual process in the background. And maybe James Heard emerges out of that rather than, you know, us spending the next 10 or 12 weeks just talking about it week in, week out. Or the other school of thought is that Andrew Welsh, young president, footy background, knows his footy, has come into the chair, the hot seat, and he's going to plant his flag on the coach that he wants, and his tenure will be defined by that. And yes, there's a personal relationship. He knows him well. I know Solly a little bit. He's a terrific person, terrific bloke. He's a sort of, from a culture and character point of view, you couldn't ask for too much more. And he's the sort of guy you absolutely want to play with. And we all knew what he was like as a player. So I like it from that point of view. And then you get people around him who can manage the X and O's a little bit. But so either school of thought is probably a win for the club, I think, Cole, given the couple of weeks that we've had since they made the call on Brad Scott.
It just seems like it's going to be an Essendon person, doesn't it? It just right from the top, right through, it's just filtering into, we've had our outsiders, even though, like, when Sheeds arrived there in 1981, I think it may have been, long, long time ago, but he was an outsider, jumped in when Essendon were sort of very patchy and controlled it for 20-odd years. Since then, mixture, nothing has really worked. Mm. I just feel that Essendon are going, we've got an Essendon player, president, we've got bits and pieces all the way through, that it's going to come from these two. I was very big on James Heard last week, so I'm only listening to what people say in the paper, but I know why Longmuir and Hinkley and these blokes would be very nervous about thinking, well, you know, what's the point? We don't need our time wasted.
So that's interesting. That's where I find Andrew Welsh the fascinating figure in all this, because if you do want to run a process, and by the way, Essendon have not come out publicly at any stage and said, we are going to run a process. Now, my understanding is that they will do a proper process, and that they'll get as many assistant coaches and, you know, prospective coaches together and interview them, and they do want to do that. But the Welsh, it's either he needs to stand out of that panel and that process to find the next coach, or, like you say, Bawley, maybe he just goes the other way and he acts like an executive president and he gets his guy, and at the end of the day, he's going to be held accountable for it.
And they'll live and die together.
Yeah, I think that's probably what he's thinking. And if he's strong on that, then that's absolutely the way, because ultimately it's going to come back to him, you know, those key pillars of the club that are going to, you know, be responsible for it, whichever way it goes. We've seen examples of it. I mean, Andrew Bassett, I think, at St Kilda's planted his flag, hasn't he? And went and got his man back.
So St Kilda's an interesting scenario, right? They didn't run a process. They just went and got the guy that they wanted. So as long as Andrew Welsh's eyes wide open, that if they do want to try and do a mix of both, do the interview panel process, and then also he wants to be part of it and appoint his guy, he's got to be fully prepared that you're not going to get the best available assistant coaches together, because there will be coaches, Mick, that will be scared off from the process saying, to hell with it, I don't want to be part of that. Mm. So he might get a smaller pool or a shallower pool, but if he's got someone earmarked, maybe he doesn't care.
The buck does stop with the head coach. I think the other part to this, though, is he's got to be thinking about the team to put around whoever is in the chair. And perhaps they get the best of both worlds. If it has to be an Essendon person, like you're saying, Mick, then whether it's James
Heard or Dean Solomon. Well, I'm not saying they have to. I'm just thinking that's where it seems to be going.
Yeah. Then that's okay. But then who's the team you're putting underneath him? Because that's the other part too, that it seems to be a bit of
criticism and question mark.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. So as long as you can bring other pieces of the puddle along with him, then they might be able to get the best of both worlds, given the state of the club and the list at the moment.
Well, I'm interested what you said, Corby, that they haven't really announced that they're...
Yeah.
Like, with Carlton, they're saying we're going to go through a process. Essendon haven't really come out and said that. And yet, we've got three clubs, two immediately for next year and one for a year later, but they all want to appoint by the end of this year. There's not a lot of wriggle room. If you lose what you want because you've been delaying it, you might be going, well, we know who we want, so therefore who cares how long it goes? I mean, that's that's the intrigue about this.
Carlton have announced their panel. Tasmania this week announced their panel too, their four-person panel to appoint their first senior coach. I believe they will do that in the next couple of weeks, and we'll learn a little more on that process, but it's probably still a fortnight away from Essendon putting that panel together. More from Mick Malthouse and Luke Ball coming up. You can chat to them on the talkback number, which is 1300 558 222, who will be the next full-time coach of the Essendon Football Club. I had the chance a few moments ago to catch up with the interim coach, Dean Solomon. The 200 gamer from the Essendon and Fremantle Football Clubs. He's a premiership player. He's in his second stint as a caretaker coach. And in the last 12 months, he's gone from the board to now coaching the football team. His name is Dean Solomon, and I'm pleased to say he joins us on ABC Sport. Dean, appreciate your time.
Oh, no problems at all, and thank you for having me.
I bet you didn't think you'd be here 12 months ago. How do you reflect on, I guess, the last 2 weeks and the last 12 months in your life?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's been pretty chaotic and it's moved pretty quickly. Literally 18 months ago, I was living in northern New South Wales and sort of sitting on the couch watching the Bombers play and just sort of thinking, how can I get back and help the footy club? And obviously I nominated for the board, got voted on and spent 12 months on the board. And then as things have unfolded, obviously we lost Daniel GNC Cruiser last year from a coaching point of view, and was happy to step up and be assistant coach, and then we kind of find ourselves here as an interim coach. So it's been a whirlwind, but it's also been really exciting, and I've really enjoyed the last 2.5 weeks, although it's been pretty crazy. But we feel like we've levelled out a bit and we've found a bit of rhythm, and I sort of thought we were very brave against Carlton the way we played.
Is it true your family's still in northern New South Wales?
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, so my wife and kids still live up there. So they're away from the Melbourne bubble at the moment. That's how quickly things have moved for us. Yeah. So we have the bye, obviously, after this, and our focus is on today. But, I'll be shooting back home just to be a dad, to do some school drop-offs and pick-ups. And that's how sort of chaotic the last 18 months have been for us as a family. Again, really honoured and grateful for the opportunity that I have right here, and we've got a bit of work to do to finish off the season really well with momentum. And as I said, I was really impressed. We've got a bit to work on, we know that, but I was impressed the way that our players went about it last Sunday night against Carlton.
I imagine that must be pretty challenging from a personal point of view when your family and your kids are up there and you're down here.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. Family's the most important thing in life to me, so it is challenging, and thank God for FaceTime these days. You can actually see their faces, but I'm looking forward to getting home. And they get down a fair bit too, and they're enjoying this experience. But it's not ideal, but it is what it is.
The things that have changed since you've come in as the caretaker coach, I notice your stoppage work in particular, your numbers, I mean, we can see that in what Champion Data publish, have improved dramatically. How have you been able to do that? How have you been able to get a bounce out of this midfield in a short period of time?
Yeah, I mean, we've tweaked a few things, and I sort of said the first week that I took this role on, I've been lucky enough to experience this once before, and how much you change is a challenge. You can tweak too much and it can fall on its face, but we had some clear areas we wanted to improve on. My philosophy has always been contest out, so stoppage work, our contest, in the contest, around the contest, the shape of the contest, and then obviously when we move the ball forward, our team defence. So we've had some shifts in those areas, and it's a positive thing, but we know we've got a lot of work to do as well.
I've been an Essendon fan for a long time, Solly, and in my entire lifetime it feels like Essendon teams the last 20 odd years have struggled to stop the transition ball. They just cannot stop teams pinging the ball from the back 50 into the opposition's inside 50. Have you made any inroads there, and I guess what can you do to try and correct that in a short period of time that you have, obviously, in a 10-week stretch?
Yeah, and I share your view on that. We haven't been great in that area, and it is a major area of focus for us. We've shifted a few things in our system, our defensive system. We're coming forward a lot more to defend here. The off-ball support is really important, so our wingers are a critical component to that. But what we do know about the Melbourne Footy Club is they attack really hard. They will challenge us, and they'll ask the question of us today, but I'm pretty excited about what we can do. So I sort of mentioned a few times we want to play our footy in the front half, more than a time and possession type team, so team defence is a big component of that.
You're getting a look at it as a senior coach, obviously in your second stint as a caretaker. What you, I'm sure, would have found in your long time in football is us in the media, we're a fickle bunch. That it's amazing that if you show too much of yourself, we're not happy with that. If you don't show enough of yourself, we're also not happy with that. And I notice you got some criticism for releasing, or the club releasing your address to the team post-game following the Carlton match. I guess your reason for addressing that, and I guess, yeah, what was the thinking behind making that public?
I'm not actually not even aware of the criticism of that. I mean, the club sort of have been filming. They film everything, a lot of things with players and coaches, and they sort of asked, you know, late last week, are you happy to release a little bit of what we've spoken about, the way that I've sort of coached and what the players are doing? And I don't really have an issue. I think it's important to bring the members and sponsors on for the ride, and it's been a tough time for our footy club. So to get a bit of an insight to what it feels like and looks like behind closed doors, I don't have a major issue with that.
The obvious question, I mean, the story that Scott Gullen wrote a couple of days ago in the Herald Sun, your name was linked to it. Andrew Welsh, the president of the football club, the report was essentially around him having you as his captain's pick to be his preferred candidate to coach the team full-time going forward. Is that your understanding?
No, not at all. It's absolute news to me. And I think, as we were mentioning before, like my life has changed a fair bit pretty quickly. My wife and kids are still in northern New South Wales. Like, I've barely had any time to talk to them over the last sort of 3 weeks. So I understand the AFL landscape too. So I've been around long enough to understand it. So I understand the world is rushing pretty quickly around me, and there's a lot of talk about who'll be next coach, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm sort of, as I said, from week one, I'm locked into what I need to do as an interim coach to look after these players, to support these staff, and make sure that the great club that I love finishes with momentum this year.
Have you heard from Andrew since that report came out?
No, I haven't. And I wasn't even aware of it until yesterday, when the media team here let me know that there was that article in the paper. My feet are where I am. I'm pretty relaxed in what we're doing. I'm not looking at the external stuff and hearing the noise. I haven't even thought about what's next. It's just the next 10 weeks, and that's critically important for this football club. We've got to finish with momentum. We've got to, whoever coaches them next, it gives them a good foundation to catapult into the pre-season with confidence.
If Essendon do decide to run a process, and my understanding is that's what they're going to do, and you've been very clear on your thoughts that, hey, I can't even think about the full-time job while I'm doing this role as an interim, do you think you could compartmentalise enough to be able to participate in a process while coaching the team at the back end of the season if the club wanted you to?
Yeah, great question, and I haven't thought about it, and I'm probably not going to think about it until the club. I mean, first step first, the club have got to decide what they want, how they want it to look, and then when is the timelines and all that sort of stuff. So there's multiple layers to all this. It's not just a split decision. It's something that needs to be heavily considered, and I don't have the time to think about it right now.
And just one more on field before we let you go. Appreciate your time, Dean Solomon, the interim coach of the Bombers. Jordan Ridley, Ben Mackay, Zach Reid. There's this stat doing the round you may have heard of. 5-3 when they played together. They've only ever played 8 games in the same team, would you believe? And yet Essendon, who have clearly had a losing record over that period of time that they've all been at the club, and yet when they play together, they've won more than they've lost. Are you aware of it? And does that mean we might see Ben Mackay back at the other end of the ground today?
Well, not really. I haven't been aware of that. It's been like Haley's Comet, isn't it? It comes around every 86 years or something. But it's a shame because we would have all loved to have seen more of it. That combination's obviously very strong. And getting Rids back, he's just such a leader. He's kind of a quiet guy, but what he says is high quality, and he just brings a lot of confidence to his teammates when he's on the field. So we're looking forward to getting him back. And Mackay, we'll stick with Mackay forward. We feel like he's really been a great presence ahead of the ball. And, mate Caddy, we haven't looked after him the last 2 weeks, and he's been out a lot, and just some of our decision and skill has been below par, and we just haven't honoured what he's presented. So we feel like Ben Mackay is a really nice foil and protects Nate a lot.
I mean, extra time, I know, but very last question. Neil Danaher's passing and funeral obviously took place this week, an emotional week for everybody in the footy landscape, but particularly the Essendon Football Club and the Melbourne Football Clubs, where Neil was so heavily involved, obviously, as a player and coach. What's the week been like from an Essendon point of view, and what will the club do today to help honour Neil?
Yeah, I mean, and that's what today's about, really. I mean, footy sometimes takes somewhat of a bit of a backward step, and Neil, what a man. I mean, just how courageous he was, what he's taught us all, and his selfless manner to give. It's just incredible. And we've taken a lot of that the last couple of weeks since his passing. We've spoken about a lot about who he is and what he stood for and what his legacy is and what can we grab hold of and implement in the last sort of back half of this year to ensure. So I hope there's a massive crowd here today to celebrate Neil and what a man, what a family. And it was a beautiful service during the week.
Dean, good luck today, the rest of the season and the rest of the way in charge of the Bombers. Appreciate your time as always.
Thank you very much.
Dean Solomon, the caretaker coach of the Bombers.
Speaks so well.
Speaks like a senior very, coach, doesn't he, Mick? Dare we say it? Speaks like a senior coach.
Well, he speaks yeah, very well. He speaks of...
Pretty unflappable. He played that too. No nonsense.
He was. And had to work hard on his game. But I like the way he described the type of game that he was. It's not one of these ones that you've got to go to the dictionary and find out what some of the words he's using. It's plain, straight, the players would get it. The trouble is, you know, when you start talking like this, you start to think about the former coach. And I don't want ever to think that people think that Brad Scott shouldn't have been there. I still believe coaches should run their thing out. But I like the way this bloke talks. And I think, he's got a history of being part of the game, so I think he could do quite well just on what he's saying and his methodologies.
This is the award-winning AFL Saturday on ABC Sport. Corbin Middlemass alongside the coaching icon Mick Mouldhouse and the Premiership pilot Luke Ball. Your calls on 1300 558 222. We'll get into the fallout from Friday night and Thursday night footy in just a moment. Brendan is the first of our callers, 1300 558 222. Hello, Brendan.
How are you going? Calling from rainy Royston, the birthplace of AFL footy. I want to talk about the mid-season draft. Whilst I don't begrudge anyone getting drafted, why is there never any commentary on the impact of state league teams? You have teams like Woodville, West Torrens, who work hard to try to get a premiership list together, then lose their three best players.
Mm. Yeah. It is. We've spoken about this before. It is a recognised problem that you're going to have. The better you play, you may well lose players, because this has been in now a couple of years, so therefore players are... It's a twofold thing. You've got the club thing and you've got players that desperately want to prove that they can have another crack at AFL. The other thing is, too, you've got to remember, is that some of these clubs bank on blooding good players and seeing them drafted, because they end up with a few dollars in their pocket from the AFL, which helps balance the books.
Yeah.
So never forget that there is a payoff. There's also that reward of looking at a player who's come to your football club or been part of your football club, and now he's going to be playing AFL. You probably get him back at some stage, whether it be at the end of his career or end of this contract. So I think I used to look at it and say, well, you know, the poor clubs. But now I look at it and go, well done to the clubs.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. I think it is. It's a feather in the cap of the clubs, their coaching, their development, and we know that players come on and develop at different levels. I certainly understand. Yes. We had the caller last week, didn't we? Understand absolutely someone who goes along and supports one of these teams, a Sandville team or a VFL team or Waffle or wherever it is, and all of a sudden, halfway through the season, they're tracking well and a couple of their best players get pulled out. Completely understand that. Mm. But I think... overall, and you see it in the reactions, you know, terrific reactions of teammates and coaches when the players had their name read out. We're going to see another couple debut today for the Demons in Lucas Cook and Joel Fitzgerald. So great stories. I think overall it's been a really good thing for the competition.
And as a native sandgroper, I mean, I grew up, my dad, for example, barracked for Claremont. He didn't have a VFL team because back then, the waffle footy was the league. It wasn't a national competition, but it's been a national competition for 30-something years. Like, it is a second-tier league. I understand the history and everything that goes around it, but you have a tiered system, and I use the example, like, when someone gets plucked from your Sheffield Shield team to play for Australia, it kind of is what it is. Yes,
it pats yourself in the back.
It hurts your Shield season, but you're happy for him that he goes and plays at the next level, and it's the same thing here. Brendan, appreciate your call. John is the next of our callers from Warburton. Hello, John.
Warburton.
Yeah, that's Warburton. Warburton in Victoria.
I was like, what?
No worries, John. I'm out of town.
I don't try and say the name.
You know, what we made a mistake on that last one was we should have asked... Sorry, what was his name, the guy last...
That was Brendan before that.
Brendan, I would like to know who Brendan supports in the AFL, because I dare say that one of those clubs would probably have plucked a player from some other club and helped generate a difference. Maybe one of the Melbourne boys who's making his debut.
Yep. So let's get back to John from Warburton.
Great show. Now, I've got a question for all of you. It's this high five business. Now, again, last night, one of the Geelong players copped one in the eye. Now, I just think that that's got to be taken out of the game because the consequences of someone getting a severe injury could cost the club the game or, if not, a flag.
A call, John, and an eye.
It's just ridiculous and it's an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
It's a bit of a modern player thing.
Pat him on the back.
High fives.
Pat him on the back.
Well, they actually practice.
And don't rub their hair.
They practice their celebrations now, Mick.
Of course they do. They copy the Americans, whatever they do.
No, I'm with John. Yep. It's,
Bully, during the week, maybe we can get the street directory out.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Let's do it. Let's put an hour on the calendars during the week, Corby, and we'll just go through suburbs of Victoria.
I was about to say, you can tell that I live in a city. 1-300-558-222 is the talkback number. That's 1-300-558-222. AFL Saturday on ABC Sport. Corbin Middlemouse alongside Luke Ball and Mick Malthouse. All right, the footy from last night, we mentioned a little bit the Gold Coast side of it. More on that to come in just a moment. That the umpiring conversation out last night was fascinating. It must be said it wasn't the best display across the board from our officials last night. I think everybody's in unison on that. Damien Hardwick was asked about it post-game, and this is what Dimmer had to say about the umpiring.
End of the day, it was like the Roman Colosseum. I reckon they're waiting in the crowd to do this one, and then all of a sudden, free kick. So, yeah, at the end of the day, it is what it is. Home ground advantage, we understand that. We know you're up against it from the start, but a couple of them I thought weren't there.
So he alluded to a little bit of home cooking. And then, naturally, as the journos do, it's our job. Chris Galt walks in straight after him. And the journos say, hey, Chris, you wouldn't believe what Damien just said. He had this to say about the umpiring. And so then Chris responded to it. And this is what Chris Galt had to say about the rule interpretations last night.
Again, I'd encourage everyone, including coaches. And I, you know, always think, you know, are we approaching this the right way? Like, our obligation is not to have an opinion on the rules, it's to understand it with perfect clarity and then explain that clearly to our players. But one of our pet hates, and I hope it doesn't happen too often, is when our players are like, what's that a free kick for? And it's clear why it's a free kick. Like, don't air your ignorance publicly. But if it's like, oh, that's a 50-50 and was it a chop of the arms, maybe it was a bit of a mistake, I reckon you kind of should let that go. You know, unless you see a clear pattern. But I mean, I had no intention of coming in to explain how all this works, but I think it is worth kind of putting on the table that if you're going to get really frustrated by something, make sure it's not your own ignorance that you're displaying for everyone. And sometimes we'll have a difference of opinion on how those things are interpreted, but it should never be because you think that prior opportunity looks like that. Like, they're being really clear on what it looks like and what it doesn't.
It's our best thing in the media when the coaches take different opinions and everybody sits back with their popcorn and listens along. And Chris Scott with a little clapback last night.
Well, look, with all due respect, I rate him immensely. I think Chris Scott's one of the, you know, great coaches. But is that the pot calling the kettle black? I mean, really? I mean, he's constantly having a crack at umpires and so forth. So, I mean, and physically displays it. So it's a frustrating game. It is a frustrating. There was no question in my mind the boundary umpire got it wrong twice. And we got Tim Wright on the boundary and two of those resulted in goals, mind you. And the soft man-on-man near the goals, they were terrible decisions. Yeah. They were absolutely terrible decisions. Surely he should be able to say that they got the rough end of the stick.
Do you think he wanted to take the opposite opinion to what Damien took?
Because he wanted to. He was wanted.
No, totally. I think Chris would agree that, because there were a few both ways. There were some free kicks that shouldn't have been paid. But I must say, I mean, it suited Dimmer last night to create a bit of distraction or play a bit of misdirection on his own team's performance over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, home ground advantages have been in play for 150 years
You've got professional.
Oh no, that's nonsense, Mick.
Well, it's not nonsense. Go and look at the World Cup. and you're going to have America play who they play, Panama.
Well, you reckon the umpires are not going to be affected by the crowd on the 50-51s there? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that's they've got to be better than that.
Of course they do. We've been saying that for 100 years.
Yeah, but there's some do but and some don't.
They're not robots. They're humans. Well, and as Swanee said during the week, they're like, at the moment...
Maybe we should get a few robots because some of these blokes are bloody pathetic.
Well, ask Chamber. But this is an umpiring list in transition as well. That's just the reality. It's the same as a footy club list. There are younger and inexperienced umpires who often get the 50-50s wrong.
But how
are we going to make them experience, Mick? That's the point. We can't keep leaning on 45-year-old, 50-year-old umpires.
They'd be better than some of these young guys.
They're the ones who...
Because they are bloody terrible.
Well, Mick, they can only get better by umpiring senior footy.
I listen to a bloke who used to be on the umpires?
Absolutely, Mick. I'm not...
Sorry.
You want them to be robots out there? I can't believe... Why are we talking about this every week? Of course, they got some wrong.
Because they're terrible. That's what we talk about it. If they were any good, we wouldn't. That's what the old game about.
What's the answer?
Sack some of them.
Sack all of them then. All right. We'll get Chambo back out there. We'll be left with three umpires during nine games a weekend.
If we had Chambo out there, at least we'd have some entertainment. At the moment, they are like
they got some
robots
wrong last night, no doubt about it. I think it's the 50-50 ones I've got to let go. Those marking contest ones frustrate everyone.
Why don't you say that then?
I've clearly said it. What's the solution?
You've got to
come
say
up
that.
With a solution.
There shouldn't be.
There were some shockers last night. Damien said that. Chris said that as well.
And what are you
saying?
Let's
talk about the footy.
Well, and you know what happens to the footy? You drop someone who's as bad as they are. Drop them.
They do get dropped. They do.
Not often enough. Clearly not often enough. They're not learning.
The combination last night was interesting too. So it was a couple of senior umpires that were out there last night as well. So Stevic, Meyer, Williamson, Toner. Okay. There's at least two names that are a bunch of the...
We're in trouble then. The experienced blokes are getting them wrong too.
This is what... And the Thursday, Friday nights are meant to be your higher umpires. The other thing to keep in mind, there's only seven games this weekend. So there's actually eight guys that ultimately aren't umpiring this weekend that in an ordinary round, they would be out
there. I didn't think the let's call them mistakes last night. They were interpretation mistakes. It wasn't a rule clarity issue.
Yep.
The interference in the marking contest.
I agree with that.
The 50-50, they need to be let go. Yep. And that's where, and Chamber will say, we can't umpire for field. It's got to be black. But sometimes...
Yep. Sometimes we come in here and we talk about, you know, a key flashpoint that was a major decision that went the wrong way. Last night felt like a feel thing. Like, it just felt like across the four quarters, you could pick isolated ones here and there, but it was a general feeling across the night that...
But we also not let it advertise on ABC Radio, but I would suggest that those boundary umpires go to Specsavers because they were horrible right in front of us on two or three occasions. What's wrong with this side of the ground?
You wouldn't be surprised we got some calls on this. 1-300-558-222. Bill is in Mildura. Hello, Bill.
Hello, how are you?
Bill?
Can you hear me?
We got you, Bill.
With Dimmer last night, I was very disgusted in his language in the box, okay? He's an AFL coach, and players get 50 metres for using the F word, okay, right? So I think his conduct was unacceptable, particularly in relation to some older people like I am. We do not use the word F, okay, right? So he's a senior coach and he's getting paid a lot of money, and what, he's in the box saying F this and F that, regardless of the whether he agrees with the umpire's decision, and that translates to the players, so then they say it on the ground to the umpire.
I think he was clearly frustrated, wasn't he? And I think back to my earlier point around the fact that it suited and after the game at the moment, he's got bigger problems on his plate. He knows that, clearly knows that. So... to me, it was when you get that on top of all the issues that he's got with his team at the moment and how they're playing, there was some real frustration, wasn't there?
You know the frustration, Bull. I'll just go back. I don't want to flog a dead horse here, but one of those free kicks in the forward pocket was just on the surge of Gold Coast. We thought the Gold Coast weren't that far behind with a lot of the football, but just mucked it up too many times, and there was one in particular that happened 10 metres out to the flank, admittedly, And that was not a free kick. That put Geelong, that broke the sequence of Gold Coast. So I can understand. Now, there's no excuse for getting beaten like they did. But at the end of the day, when you get a little bit of momentum up and you start to put the bit of pressure back on the opposition and you're getting closer to them, you don't know what ramifications that has. So the frustrations, whether he says F or whatever else he says, I didn't see it. We were calling the game. But I guess there's a lesson there from the TV networks. You know, I always say to coaches, when you've coached at MCG, 100,000 people, I'm telling you right now, people don't go to watch you coach, they watch the players. So get the TV off the coaches, and that might help.
Thanks, Bill. Chris in South Australia, the next of our callers. Hello, Chris.
Hi, fellas. After umpiring for 44 years, and I went from single umpire, two umpire, three umpire, umpires are individuals. There's a lot of things that we don't consider. The experience of individual umpires, I'm a Crows supporter, and I look at the umpires that are adjudicating at a Crows game. There's a couple of experienced ones, and there's some inexperienced ones. And I saw one when we played Geelong. I didn't think he umpired well in decision-making. And I thought there was a couple of frees that he was not blocked, but he didn't pay a couple of frees that I thought were obvious. But the whole thing is, until you get out there, and the bottom line is, in all the years, I never umpired a perfect game, and no umpire that goes out there, whether it's boundary or field, will never umpire a perfect game. And it's getting harder and harder, but the critical thing is positioning. The sad thing, I think, is in four umpires, I don't think they're working hard enough.
Oh. It's an interesting point, isn't it? Yeah, and it hasn't been the first time that it's been made in the last couple of years, whether we're okay with three or whether the additional one has increased the accuracy. I think I would know, but sort of feel is that it possibly hasn't. Mick, what I do know is that there is some rigour around how they review their performances, and we're having a bit tongue-in-cheek, but they are ranked or graded, because ultimately at the end of the year, when they're picking the umpires to play the finals, they need a system throughout the year. So they do absolutely review their games strongly. And ultimately, as the caller said then, the only way to get better on is to expose someone. I think that's what the four umpires allows you to do. And you'll see a mixture of senior umpires and younger umpires amongst the four, especially in the bigger games. Sometimes you've got to give them exposure. Now, that just might mean that these 50-50s, they don't get quite right every now and then.
Paul from Otways is the next of our callers. Hello, Paul. You got us, Paul?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Far away. Yep, we got you.
All right.
Go for it, Paul.
Yeah, kudos to Bawley for standing up for the umpires and the future of the game. They're young. They're human. We can't abuse them because the abuse trickles down to the kids. Got to back them in.
Yeah, certainly abuse, absolutely not. And Mick, you're not hitting that part. I think you're talking about accountability because, you know, and the perennial debate around how professional are they, do we need to move towards that? It doesn't feel like we're a step closer at all into that discussion. But don't get me wrong, there needs to be absolutely accountability and strong review of performance. And, you know, if there's a certain error that's continually being made, then there needs to be action on that. And from my very small experience, there was. That's all I'm saying. But the game is,
can I just jump
the game
in there,
is
Paul,
hard to umpire.
Just a second. You know, we're talking about the four umpires. The umpire here, last night we looked at the game and thought, whoa, where's that umpire come? There was an umpire within 10 metres of a contest. It was going down Geelong's end. But an umpire from 30, 40 metres away called it. Now, I get that because sometimes your angle is not right. But I reckon if you've got an umpire in the vicinity and knows that supposed hold of the forward, that happens. If it happened all around the ground, we would be constantly blowing the whistle. So I don't get why you haven't got the consistency. And if you've got an umpire who's looking at it like that, he's looking for free kicks. And that makes them nervous to make a decision as opposed to let the game flow. I mean, the best umpires let the game flow and it's been a man's game. God, I come away from basketball and soccer over the weekend watching granddaughters. It's far more, it's just as technical, but they allow the game to flow.
What does Ray always tell us? If it's not a hell yeah, it's a big no.
That's why he's a good umpire.
1300 558 222. Other matters that are going on in the footy landscape, just to round off on the Gold Coast Suns, I wonder what role the off-contract guys are having to play in all of this with the Suns at the moment. So Ben King seemingly was over the line and staying. Damien Hardwick was asked about him during the week, and it felt like, gee, the tone had shifted dramatically on this front, and this is what he had to say about Ben King, who seemingly was staying for 2 years and now might be leaving.
Oh, look, I'd love Ben to stay for another 8 years, to be perfectly honest, but what that young man has done for our footy club is he's served his time, and free agency is part of our game now. So it's his opportunity to explore, and we understand that and we respect that. What we are incredibly grateful for is the 8 years he's provided us with, and like I said, I wanted to spend another 8 here. But these sort of things, there's no time frame on these. Like, he can decide this week, he can decide next week, he can decide in 4 weeks, he can decide at the end of the year. What we do know at the moment, he's an important player for us and he's ours. So we've just got to make sure we get the very best out of Ben at this point in time and get him playing his best footy. He was terrific last week. We expect the same this week.
So he's unsigned. He's a free agent. Jed Walter has had a $1 million a year, 5-year deal contract put up to him this week. So the Suns have upped that after their initial offer. Essentially, you would think, hey, they consider King going. They need to make sure they don't lose both of them. And then there's Bailey Humphrey, who, of course, walked the town last year with Stephen King, wanted to come back to Melbourne. Damien Hardwick's been so strong that he's not leaving and that he's contracted. Yeah. He's there until 2028. He's not playing good football at the moment. So he's been poor by his standards, and he's really had one standout game way back at the start of the year.
Yeah.
Is it weighing on them, do you think, these guys, and contributing to what's going wrong at the Suns?
No question. Once these contracts start to eat into the players, I've seen it regularly as a coach, and this is when things were basically kept pretty secret. Now it's all out in the open, and I've seen players are tormented by the decision they're going to make, and their performances fall off, not because they want it to fall off, it's because it takes priority in their mind. And some players can handle it, most players can't handle it. They feel as if they're... I've been coached for 10 years, but I'm going back, and players feel they're letting their teammates down by holding out, and it's
too hard a game, because single-minded, if you're not 100% of your focus on the task at hand, and you're right, it can be subconscious at times. It's not even them day in, day out thinking about it, but it's just floating in the back of their mind, and that's all it can take.
I had Eddie Betts in
my thing. Yeah, that's right. Now, in fairness to Ben King and the forward, and Walter and the forwards, Gold Coast's issue at the moment, which is just staggering when you think about it. They've completely lost their Onewood. Yeah. This is a team who was so strong last year. They add Petrarca to the middle of the ground, and they're 18th in the competition in clearances.
Yeah,
18th. So if you're playing in the forward line on the Gold Coast at the moment.
You said something like they were second last in tackles last night.
That's related to, isn't it?
Yeah, because it is.
Out of the 13 games they've played, last night was only the second time they've won the tackle.
So they have lost their hunger, around the source, and that was such a strength last year. So it was Witts and Rao last year, one of the great combinations. Yeah. Now, Witts finds himself out of the team. He's a bit older, so that was always had the potential to happen. And they've been bringing Moyle along as a replacement. But that can take a bit of time. But clearly, Rao's not the player he was last year. So he's had the hand injury. So getting back to that, Noah Anderson wins the coach's award last year. He's not the player he was. And took Miller as well. And then
Miller's dropped right off.
Petrarca is playing well individually, though, but for whatever reason, that crew of players, for them to be producing the output they are at the moment and ranked where they are in the competition. Yeah. That's the problem. That's the issue.
Speaking of the player movement space, and we touched on earlier in the show, coaches taking differing opinions. Well, Luke Beveridge spoke during the week about the emotional pull of Zach Butters to come to the Western Bulldogs, and the fact that he first met him in the cafe at Wet Noble, and he had the number 6 Brad Johnson number on his back on his Bulldogs jumper. Well, Josh Carr, it didn't pass him by. Zach Butters, current coach at Port Adelaide. This is what Josh had to say yesterday about Butters and the conversation around him.
I'd like to say I'm probably a little bit different than some coaches. You know, those conversations, if I do have them, you guys won't know about. I always love when a coach starts with, I don't really like talking about other clubs' players, but then go for four and a half, 5 minutes and talk about it. So, you know, like, I'm different to that view. I mean, you know, obviously talking about Bevo's conversations and media that he did, and I'd attack a bit differently.
I love the senior coaches. I mean, it's such a unique role. There's only 18 jobs in the country, and obviously a couple of them in caretaker spots at the moment. But Mick, you guys are a fascinating bunch in how you all interact with each other. I think there could be something in like a... Can we get all the coaches in the Big Brother house and see how that goes, and eliminate each other and we can all just listen in on some of the conversations when they're all in the same space?
You'd want 18 rooms. Honestly, though, I don't think too many would be bunking in the same bunk.
Interesting, isn't it? Because I liked what Josh Carr said. I think all coaches start at that point. I'm certain you'd be able to find a grab of Bevo 2 or 3 years ago saying exactly that. I'm not here, I don't talk about other teams. Every coach has said that until they're in the position where a top five player in the competition is interested in coming to their club.
Yeah.
Now, I did think Bevo went on a little bit too long about... But also, I don't have an issue with it. So I feel like at times coaches feel like they have to take a position on behalf of their club. I'd be interested, you know, if you actually sat down off air and had a off-the-record conversation with Josh and the roles were reversed, if he really has an issue with it or if he's content with the relationship he's got with his player and he knows that it hasn't affected Zach this year and it won't continue to affect him. So we're not going to be able to come out and have a hard and fast rule and penalise coaches for talking about other players. So it's almost like a coaches association thing. They need to come out and say, guys, if one of you are happy to do it, then all of us have to get on with it and not have an issue with it. There's no rule about it.
That's the whole thing.
I've heard people in the media basically argue, we should have an anti-tampering rule where you can't talk about... I don't know. I would argue the media thrives off it. I mean, you look at the interaction and the conversation that happened about player movement and everything that goes on in that space.
But it swings and roundabouts. Every coach is going to have an opportunity or is going to have a situation where they're on the receiving end of it, a player of theirs, current player, talked about. And then the other way as well. So I just think it...
Do you know what it sounded like?
As long as it's respectful.
If Luke Beveridge knew that Zach Butters was going there, he wouldn't be talking like
that. Definitely.
So it makes me think either the Butters camp have kept this so quiet or maybe he's not going to the Western Bulldogs.
I'm not of the view that he's made a decision.
Because if he's sitting there talking about, his emotional pull to the club and everything else, if you knew you had him in the bag and he was going to play for the Dogs, you wouldn't be talking about it.
No, I'm not of the view at all that Zach's made a decision 100% to leave, first and foremost. He's probably leaning that way, but certainly where he's going. That's my view. I think he is genuinely, and his performances back it up. I'm playing this year out, and when our season finishes, when my responsibilities at the Port Adelaide Footy Club are finished for the year, then I'll make the decision.
Yeah, he's all in, isn't he? He's a sort of kid that you'll love the trench stuff. He would be in there with you. And right to the last game, or maybe not the last game.
He's my favourite player in the game. I love the way that he goes about it. And I think he'd be immensely popular with the fan base. The talk about, Steph Curry, I was comparing him to Steph Curry in the NBA, where his rise to stardom, basically, yes, he shoots a lot of threes and that's eye-catching, but essentially what they found in America, a lot of these marketing studies, that he resonated a lot with kids because of his size, because he looked like this little guy that was running around with all these giants. And so it related to little kids. They could almost feel like they could see themselves out there on the field. And I feel like that's with Butters. He goes about it the right way. He's a little guy that zips in and out, hard as pips.
I think it's a good cop because he's a glue guy. He's a team first man, which is very rare over in the US in basketball, and not as rare here as we know. But I don't think he's made his call, and I think he'll genuinely make it at the end of the season.
Speaking of calls that have to be made, Patrick Dangerfield, the coach, the captain, of course, of the Geelong Football Club. Mick asked the chief executive of Geelong, Steve Hocking, about it last night as to whether he will go on in 2027. This is what Steve had to say.
We're so fortunate with him because he's so mature, and so we will just sit at the appropriate time and chat that through. I think he'll go on for what it's worth. That's my own personal view.
And do you think he should go on with
that? Look, I think managed correctly. Yeah, there's no question.
With 23 players.
No question about that.
So that was Steve Hocking last night talking about the Geelong skipper. Did that catch you by surprise?
I did, actually. I thought they'd be more inclined to say, well, look, we'll talk to him and see how his body is and how everything else is going. But he was very honest about it. He said, look, he didn't know, but he was very honest and said, I think, for my take, that he will play on. If he can continue to give, out of the 23 games, and plays 7 and 18 and gives 10 good games, Why not?
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. Why not? Not just the way he's playing, but he clearly has a big impact on the club broadly too, both the locker room, but also he's such a great, such a great role model and leader at the club more broadly and for the region. I think body and mind willing, and they've got the management.
He loves the game.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's an absolute no-brainer, and it's not going to be a money issue with him clearly as well. He'll sit down. They'll come to an agreement, and you know, there's a lot to play out between now and the end of the year. What we know is, in September, players like that become invaluable.
Yeah.
The other interesting part that we spoke to him about last night was the Geelong injury list. And we talk a lot about it in the press where, you know, they went with short-term, medium-term in the past, and they were the only club and a bit of an outlier. They regularly make late changes. And Chris got, to his credit, he's been on with us and spoken philosophically about it, where he just doesn't believe in it the same way that the other clubs do, that the clubs should be as transparent as they are with the injury list. It's actually written in the CBA. So Clint Wilden provided me some information on that says that clubs need to disclose and be accurate when it comes to their injuries. Even if you look at their current injury list, it's filled with TBCs and indefinites and tests that are on there. And yet, Steve Hocking said last night, we've received no communication from the AFL to say, hey, we're not doing the right thing, which to me almost shifts the conversation away from, hey, if Geelong do that and they can get away with it, fair play to them. It's almost on the AFL to decide, are they happy for Geelong to go about it the way they do? And if you're any of the other 17 clubs, I'd be looking at the Cats and the way they do it and thinking,
and join
why am I being honest if they're allowed to get away with it and do it the way they want to do it?
Yeah, well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because if it's a rule and the AFL aren't administering it, who's at fault? There's only one fault, and that's the AFL. Geelong aren't.
Interestingly, in the NFL, they have a model which I quite like, and again, we borrow a lot of stuff that comes from American sport, but that they have a practice report every week, so you basically need to submit whether a player participated in was a full participant, a limited participant, or did not participate in practice. And then a day out from the game, you need to declare every player's game day status. So there's, you know, four different categories. One is available. The next one's questionable for a guy that's 50-50. Doubtful is 25%. And then out completely. And essentially, you need to move through the categories to come back and play. So you can't go from doubtful 25% to in the team. You have to go the questionable, and then you can only get picked from 50-50. So it means that the clubs basically can't, you know, just
budget.
Say someone's hurt, and then all of a sudden, bang, they're in the team and they're playing. Or so you actually have to step through the process to return to play.
Is there a reason for that, Corby?
Why they do it?
Yeah.
I think it's just an integrity thing. I mean, the reasons were, you know, level playing
field. The supporters.
The betting, the when it comes
fantasy
to
fantasy football,
there's so much baked into it nowadays that it's an integrity issue. I know people roll their eyes at the betting aspect of it, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
It's here to
stay. Yeah, it is. Oh, I get that, and you know what? It wouldn't be that difficult. It wouldn't be that difficult to do that.
It's also medical accountability. I mean, the Tom Stewart one, which is why it's so puzzling we can't get an answer out of this, that the idea of the mandate for the stand down period when it comes to concussion.
Yeah.
It's 12 days to make sure that everybody knows that. So when we look back on this time in 25 years, when who knows what's happening legal-wise, you can say, hey, we stood players down for 12 days. This is when they entered the concussion protocol. This is when they came out.
Mm.
This was deemed to be world's best practice at the time, and we followed it.
Yeah.
And this
black and white, players miss grand finals, players miss finals.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's not transparent, at least on every occasion. And then the Thursday night game. I mean, has anyone got a superlative for Jordan Dawson that they want to throw out here? I mean, what a year this guy's having.
He's had an up-and-down year, emotionally and sporting-wise. Like, we some areas we just don't want. And he's been remarkable. My picture of him is breaking down after, not this game just gone, the game before. It was against Geelong, too.
Yeah.
And his efforts on the ground, obviously it just bubbled over after signing. And I think he's warmed himself to nearly every supporter in Australia.
I agree.
And the way he plays,
he's
grown with that.
Well, he seems to have gotten to a position, and he's never going to get over it. We know that, absolutely. And you know, I can't imagine the week to week and day to day, and it'd be one foot in front of the other. But it's clear, I think, looking on, that he's got to the position where footy is a healing part of it, isn't it? Or a great thing for him. He's able to, whatever he's going through day to day, week to week, when he steps out, he's able to release and yeah. and play with freedom and use it as potentially a healing thing. And gosh, aren't the Crows
better off around. For
it? He's not a big physical demonstrative leader, is he? But gee whiz, the way he's playing at the moment, he's you know, his teammates are jumping on board, and all of a sudden the Crows are in the are in the conversation again. Mick, they're looking really good.
Yeah, they are.
Quick questions on the way out. Does Taylor Walker come straight back in?
I think so. Well, no, horses for courses.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it works.
Okay, Pedler goes out with the hammy. On with you, Mick. I'm not so sure he comes straight back in. And then Adam Treloar.
No.
How much tread's left on his tyres?
No.
Really feel for him.
You know he tries, but that try now is well below the standard that is expected. I'd be very surprised he survives.
Well, he's a deep thinker too, and he's been on record as saying that. And once it just looks like at the moment, he's in a position where he's spiralling in terms of his confidence, and it's hard to get out of there.
Thanks, Mick.
Pleasure, Corby. All the best. See you next week.
Yeah. Catch up on ABC AFL Daily, the full episode, wherever you get your podcasts.